Blog Talk Radio.
Goodness, hold on, children. Hold on with me here. What's going on?
General quarters. Security condition 3.
GQ. Security 3, sir. General quarters 3. Intruder alert. GQ 3. Intruder alert.
It's not an intruder. It's not an intruder. It's me. Hey. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. Once again, I'm not going to say welcome here on Wednesday night, May the 4th be with you. I was going to leave that for my dear friend Becky Kyle to say. But welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. And I'm going to get started because if you know, if there's one thing I love besides tea and 80s new wave music and Pernell Roberts, it's dogs. And so tonight is dog life on Madame Perry's Salon. I'm thrilled to have some special people, and I think that's who my doorman, Mr. Sulu. You know, it's good to give a retired actor a job, but he's kind of takes it and goes too far. But I think my guests are almost here, and so before I have a chance to tell you who they are, I think I'm going to go ahead and see if he'll just open the door and let them in. I'll just introduce them. Oh, they all drove up together. Thank goodness. Let's see. Who's oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely Becky. That's Becky Kyles. I think that's yeah, that's
it.
Becky, come on
in.
It
sounds like Cthulhu's rising.
Come on in, come on in. Becky and, oh my gosh, it's our friend Annie Phoenix and Julie Campbell. Come on in.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
I am delighted to have you here. I am thrilled to have you here. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. I've been trying to tidy up the place. I had some of Becky's other friends over last week, some mystery writers, and I think Brett Wright left a burrito in the cushion again. What do you think of the place?
It's cool. Well, it's a little bit of a mess from the mystery writers, but otherwise it's quite cozy.
I think it
looks particularly purple, perhaps for Prince.
Yeah. So I think that some of his friends were over here. Actually, Sheila E. was over here trying to stash some stuff that she thought that maybe his ex-wife might come out to get out of her house. So I'm just a fence, you know, for any. I'm a celebrity fence location. Or
and if you see
fence.
Any beef sticks, don't eat them.
Oh, dear.
Left those too. They are not safe.
Gotcha. All right. So everybody that listens to the show knows our dear friend, writer, editor, bon vivant, and proponent of cat hammocks and RVs. Troublemaker, Becky Kyle. Becky, it's always a delight to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jen. I love the genie bottle. I got my favorite cushion despite the fact that these two women were trying to fight me for it.
Well, it's a wonderful color. I mean, it's so squishy. But, you know, you're meaner than I am, so you got it.
Oh, that was right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
it's
kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, but fasten your seat belts, everybody. All right. And we also have with us tonight author J.A. or Julie Campbell. Julie, this is your – you've been on the show before, though, haven't you?
Yeah. Once.
Yeah. Julie's been here before. And what do you think? Does it look any better or worse than the last time you were here, Julie?
Except for the mystery writer mayhap. Yeah, it looks good. Got the place cleaned up.
Yeah.
Lots of cozy cushions. I guess I don't have to fight Becky for it.
Okay. All right.
Need to get the dogs in here though.
So we're going to talk. So Julie Campbell, you have horses. You work sheep with your dogs. You have three cats. You have border collies. You write. You write. Oh, and for gosh sake. You write all kinds of books. You have young adult books. You have vampire hunting dog stories. Vampire hunting dogs?
You have vampire hunting dog stories, ghost hunting dog stories, pulled from a dog's point of view. I got young adult fantasy about horses that teleport to other worlds. I've got some stuff I'm actually writing with Becky about some necromancers. Yeah, I write a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah, and in fact, you and Becky have some good news, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
We do.
I keep up. You want to
share it, Becky?
Pardon?
So, do you want to share it, Becky?
Well, all right. We have two books coming out very shortly. Necromantic Shenanigans is coming out sometime in June. We have Light Chips and Sabers out now, which is an anthology of space opera and similar science fiction and fantasy. And we will be having a urban fantasy series coming out through Untold in several weeks, I think.
Yeah, probably a couple months.
That is awesome. Where can people get those? Amazon and where else?
Amazon,
if you catch us in person.
Yeah, Create a Space. You can always contact either one of us and get them signed, actually.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good, too. All right, so we'll make sure, too, before we end, that we have all the information in the shows and also on the Madame Perry's Salon page on Facebook where to find all of your books. Annie Phoenix is a dog trainer. You're recommended by veterinarians. You're a nationally recognized behavior expert, AKC evaluator. And I really want to talk to you about this sometime. A nose work competitor, because I'd love to have my dogs in that. You have something called, you teach called a growly dog class. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And, yeah. And
I bet your dogs would love nose work. I have not met a dog yet that doesn't, but corgis and in particular I think would really excel at it.
And corgis, they're so close to the ground anyway. You know.
Yeah.
You.
It's convenient.
You also are a trainer in residence for Dogster.com, which is one of the largest online gathering spots for dog lovers. You have a weekly advice column there. And so wait just a minute. You're going to hear mine because mine, when the show, I'm ashamed to admit this to you ladies with dog experts, animal experts, but my dogs, who are the wonderful, but they become extortionists. When the show starts, because they know that I'm, when this thing goes on my head, the big microphone out here, they become extortionists. Like, come on, you know. give me a treat if you want me to shut up. So, and your new book is called The Midnight Dog Walkers. Because is that about people like me that are vampires that that are out there walking the dogs? Or the
well, you know,
dogs?
That's an aspect of it I didn't consider, but it could certainly apply to those people who like to be out after dark. I called it that after I work with a lot of reactive, mostly with, we call them reactive, they overreact to stimuli in their environment, other dogs, people, thunder, noise, whatever it is, or they're aggressive. Most dogs are reactive and not actually aggressive. It comes from a state of anxiety versus, you know, true aggression. But so many of my clients over the years would just sheepishly tell me that their solution was to avoid their dog freaking out, in their words, at whatever, dogs, people, skateboards, they'd get, yes, walk after midnight. And so I thought, well, you're all in the Midnight Dog Walkers Club. And the book is about how to get out of that. Because that's just not very realistic.
I got you with that. Okay, well, now that everybody knows who's here, who you are, and by the way, we have somebody else that's visiting in the studio. It could be one of your friends. Let me see. Hey, this is Madame Perry. It's dark in here. Who we have? Hello? Oh, well. Maybe they went out for a sandwich. Hello? This is Madame Perry. Who do I have on the line with us?
Hello?
Hey. Hi. This is Madame Perry.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were talking to me. How exciting.
Yeah. Well, obviously. And who is this, please?
Sorry, this is my name's Jeff, and I was just going to call in with a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, Jeff. Okay, great. And so if you don't mind, since you're already with us, do you mind hanging with us and listening for a while, and then we'll get your question in once we get everybody a little more
established? Absolutely.
Jeff, can I get you anything? I think there's a burrito behind that cushion you're in. Brett Wright.
Yeah, I've already started nibbling on it. Thank you. It's delicious.
Oh, okay, good. See, I like people.
Don't eat the beef stick.
You know, this is like almost like something where you have to, like some kind of something between Welcome to Night Vale, you know, some kind of dystopian talk show and a interview show altogether. Because you have to follow along to know these the callbacks, right, Becky? Oh, and also
That's
Becky,
right.
Although we think of her as a cat lover too, but I know she loves dogs. And also Becky, and I think Julie, were you involved in Tales from the Front Lines?
Yes.
Did you have a story?
No, I was. I'm the editor. Julie was. I didn't know her at the time.
Yeah, that was a little bit before we met.
Yeah, I mean, okay, when you say I, you're talking. That's Becky. Becky was.
Yeah, that's me. That's Becky.
Okay.
I edited a anthology which benefits service dogs for veterans and other emergency service workers with PTSD. It's called Tales, T-A-I-L-S, from the Front Lines, and it is available at Amazon or Smashwords or wherever you can buy good quality books. It's a collection of stories about dogs in service and the relationship between soldiers and their dogs.
Okay, very good. And that's, I'm for anything that supports too veterans and the wounded warriors, whatever. I think that's such an underserved group that deserves far better. And of course, the only thing though is when I've seen videos and things about people training dogs to help wounded warriors, and I saw one where the dog is helping the guy is in a wheelchair, and the dog, you know, opens the washer, puts in the laundry, gets it started, and I'm thinking, why can't I get a dog to do that? But well, the ones that drive the Mini Coopers. Yeah, I know where mine would be. They'd be in the drive thru at Chick-fil-A all the time. more nuggets. Okay.
Your dog would be plotting world dominion. You know, your dog would be training the corgis how to bribe you even more with treats and stuff while you're on the air.
Oh, no, they know.
Is,
you gals know. Corgis think.
It is fascinating to think about if dogs could talk. I mean, how different our relationship would be. It may not be so simpatico.
You know, I was thinking,
God.
You know, Mike, now, because Parker was chained to a tree when we found him, he's got terrible thunderstorm anxiety, and he knows where his medicine is, and he will come and get you and take you to his pills and sit there while you give it to him. Now, as bad as dog hates a pill, if he'll take you to his pill bottle and sit there, you know he needs relief and he knows where, you know, it comes. But then again, I think, but if he could talk, you know, would you want that, Becky? Because I could just picture, yoo-hoo, Parker, come
if
here.
If my dog could talk, my dog would be saying stuff that probably, you know, he would pick up my vocabulary. And I honestly swear that my swear jar is already full, and the dog would have to have one, and that would be terribly alarming.
You have enough money to buy a small island. No, I just picture if I call my dog, and then they could talk. They go, not now. I'm chewing my butt. Later, huh? Okay. Can't you see I'm busy?
There is a famous border collie named Chaser, who you guys might have heard of, who is owned by an
amazing.
Yeah, retired psychologist, and he did scientific studies and proved that Chaser understands 1,000 words at a minimum and understands the difference between a noun and a verb. And I know another veterinary behaviorist who is saying she thinks dogs will learn to speak, which is
That's very interesting
to think about.
Well, you know, you think about with stem cell therapy, you know, when we can start crossing cells from humans to animals, and think about what would happen if we could give a dog, particularly a police dog or a service type animal, the ability to speak with stem cells. Now, you know, we're going to have to teach that animal how to filter, because clearly, you know, we really don't want your service dog walking down the street and saying, oh, perfect, I'm going to pick up this dog turd and carry it around.
Or are you
Which
really
is
wearing
actually
that
what happened
outside
to a blind
in public?
Friend. Pardon?
Or a dog says, are you really wearing that in public?
Oh, yeah.
I know, because I feel like Fiona, it just hit me recently. Fiona's at that stage. I couldn't figure out for a while. She's Fiona, who's Pembroke. She's at that stage, Annie, where it seems like everything I do just humiliates her just to be around me. I guess so. It's like what I wear, what I do, what I say. She's like, oh, God.
Rolls her eyes. Sounds like a teenager.
She may be. She may be. We weren't sure how old she was. Not that she lies about her age, I don't think, but it's because the rescuer people weren't sure how old she was.
I think one of the things we all love so much about dogs is they don't seem to be as self-conscious or self-conscious as we are, and they're willing to make complete fools out of themselves while they're just enjoying life and playing, and they don't really judge us, at least as far as we know, because they can't talk. In our own minds, we think they don't judge us. They might be, but they don't act like it, and I think that's some of the remarkable things about dogs.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, there are times where I can definitely tell Kira is judging me. Like, you really told me to go away when I'm supposed to be coming. Come by, seriously, stupid human. But you know,
Kira is scary. I have met her border collie, and this is a gorgeous animal. This animal, Julie is talking about border collies having something that you call the eye, and clearly, you know, when I joke about being the black sheep of the family. There might be more to that than I imagine, because literally she can hypnotize you.
I believe it. I have a female border collie named Echo. We call her the queen, and she kind of quietly rules the roost.
Well, see,
she's
that's
not
why
quite
you watch
so quiet about it.
I have a very dear friend here in Border Collie Rescue. She keeps saying, Beck, I can hook you up. And I'm like, I don't need a dog that can rule the world.
I'm telling you, Village of the Damned, that's the whole thing. You've got to see this movie. I'm going to send this to you and put this up on Facebook. But it's a 1960 movie. It's black and white, because I feel that with my court, like they stare at me as they're trying so hard to, come on. You've got to get this telepathy thing. You know, you got all these little, you got to get it. Come on, sit there, concentrate.
The idea of emotional contagion. I read a lot lately from neuroscientists, because everything to me is the brain, and what if you have a brain issue in a dog, a brain issue in a person, and how we try to help those types of things. And emotional contagion to me is so interesting, because it happens between dog and handler all the time. So if you have a dog and you're in the Midnight Dog Walkers Club, and the dog is barking and lunging and acting hysterical when it sees another dog, it's really important what the human does, because we know that emotional contagion can happen between species, which is blows my mind if you really think about it.
Oh, yeah, because let me ask you this, too. And, this makes me think, Becky, do you think it's possible we could get Annie and Julie back here and have Doug Bremner with us, too?
God, yes.
Yeah? You think that would work?
I think so. I don't think Annie and Julie know who Doug Bremner is. Dr. Douglas Bremner is a psychiatrist who was on the forefront of PTSD research back in the 1980s. He was one of the first researchers that started studying the brains of Vietnam vets and scanning them, and that's where he determined that the amygdala in vets who had what they called combat stress at that point were smaller. They had shrunk. And, the amygdala is what shrinks in PTSD, and that is this portion of your brain, consider it the portion of the computer that processes stress and emotion, so they're not capable of dealing with input like a normal person would be. And Dr. Bremner also has dogs, too, so he would be excellent to have on a program with the two of you.
And he's been on this show before a couple of times. And, two, whenever he's on, his sister tweets about it and lets everybody know, which is thousands of people. His sister's Ann Bremner, the legal. She's a lawyer. She's also always CNN, a lot of the legal advisors.
Yeah.
So she's always good to promote when he's on there so people will tune in. But, yeah, he's
I would love that. I'm just so fascinated by it. And researchers are finally, in the last decade or so, finally studying dogs because we're having so much trouble with them. And they used to just fit in more seamlessly, and there were fewer dogs, and mom stayed home, and the dog roamed the neighborhood, and we didn't all have leashes and, you know, basically imprison the dogs in a way. I mean, we had to. We had to do all that. But it has consequences.
But we're also feeding them more crap, too, you know? I'm really concerned with all the recalls that we've had. I have cats, and, you know, I went through like 5 or 6 foods and one brand twice with recalls. And, you know, the garbage in, garbage out.
Yep, I agree.
Well, I have a question for you.
The thing that we're learning from them, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
The thing that we're learning from dogs is phenomenal. You know, from Chaser and the studies they did to the book called Inside of a Dog. I can't remember the author's name, but that was amazing too, just the psychology of the dog. And some of the MRI studies that they've been able to do with dogs where they train the dogs to lie in one awake. And, yeah, just all the different things that they've learned. You know, they used to do behavior studies with, they've learned that the same sort of behavior studies actually seem to work better with dogs from what I've read. So it's just really cool. Dogs are amazing.
Wait. You know, and Parker can let us know ahead of time if we're getting ready to leave the house, but he knows it's going to storm. He has a way, you know, let me go with you. He'll let you know this is not just an ordinary take me. This is, I need to go with you, you know. And we always say sometimes we look at the weather report. Well, the weather report says fine. He goes, no, I'm telling you, I got to go with you. And he's always right. And we have kind of a callback. There was something, I think it was on Maury Povich, where they bring the guy and the couple in. They're having problems, and they get a decoy to go out and hit on the guy in a bar, and they start making out. So they show the video to the guy. Did you cheat on somebody while – this is the backstory of this joke. Did you hit on somebody while you were here with your girlfriend? No. And then they show the video, and the girlfriend hits him, and he goes, baby, who are you going to believe, me or that video? Well, anyway, and that's what we always say when Parker goes – when he says, well, the weatherman, the weather report, you know, we check weather underground, weather.com, it says something. And Parker, who are you going to believe, me or that weatherman? You know?
Yep.
And he's always right. You know, he's always right.
Yep.
But I do have a question for Annie. But before that, when you talk about the eye that the border collie can give you, there is a group, and, well, anybody can look on it, it's not private, on Facebook called Disapproving Corgis. And it's all pictures of disapproving corgis, you know, like so-and-so disapproves of being on a forced march when it's actually a family walk in the woods, or so-and-so disapproves of not getting the bacon off a plate or something, you know, and that the stare they can give you. So, but Annie, author of The Midnight Dog Walkers, I can't even tell all the initials and certifications and cred you've got with training dogs. But I know that you do have some classes called something called the Growly Dog classes and so forth, and talking about dog barks, does your dog bark, lunge, or growl. Why do people feel like, and I know because as much of a dog lover as I am, you know, me and my dogs were attacked by Rottweilers once. I was bit, Benny was bit. Why do we why are we seeing more problematic dogs?
That's a great question, and it's a complicated question. The short answer is, in my belief anyway, and also based on a lot of research and studying this area, so much of it has to do with overbreeding of dogs, breeding dogs that are too closely related for profit, not breeding for temperament and health, but breeding for pretty dogs and show dogs that cost a lot of money. I mean, basically, if you get into breeding for profit only, the animal suffers, and then the human suffers eventually because they have a problematic dog. Puppy mills certainly contribute. I think one of the biggest problems that people tend to overlook is whatever happens in utero to that puppy is critical in its development, same with a human child. And that early couple of weeks with a breeder is so very important. Like, people think, well, I have an 8-week or 9-week old puppy, I have to go to puppy class, they know that. Well, it needs to start well before that dog comes home with you. Because the brain is still forming, and the dog is forming its opinions of the world, and we know that if it's not properly and fairly and positively socialized by 12 to 16 weeks of age, that the part of the brain that can receive new information is shuts down. We can still teach old dogs new tricks, but we're playing catch-up, And so people, like, I see literally the term backyard breeder. I see on local garage sale sites, on online or Facebook pages, photos of puppies literally in the backyard. Puppies, you know, mm-hmm. fending for themselves out night and day. Those puppies need to be in the house, and they need to be socialized by the breeder as early mm-hmm. as three weeks of age. And that prevention can save a whole lot of problems, that and proper breeding. So that's
kind of
a short answer.
Going off of what you said, when I was studying up on puppies quite a bit last year, the early socialization and stuff, and the book I was reading really recommended that, or suggested that the socialization really starts as soon as they're born, even with, you know, they have their litter mates and their mother and stuff, but they really recommend that the human handle them even from, you know, the day they're born and really interact with them that way too. Not a lot, not excessively, but just enough to get them used to all the things that they have to deal with as a dog in our world.
Very much so.
To start right from the beginning.
One thing I tell my clients that just kind of blows their mind a little bit is that the idea of touch, human touch,
mm-hmm.
can be aversive, not only to puppies and kittens, but to baby children.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in the womb. They've been comfortable. That's what they know. They come out, and it's overwhelming with stimuli. And if touch isn't done, at the, you know, think about those poor children, was it Romania, that were in, you know, packed in like sardines and were not touched and held.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's the same with puppies, and it is very true that so much has to happen with the breeder, and I think that there's just not a lot of responsibility or consequences to the breeder who isn't doing that. To breed a good dog is not easy.
It's right.
Well, yeah, and like... when we got Fiona, they said they thought she was about 4 years old, and they said apparently it was her and two other Pembrokes that were owner surrenders, but she had lived most of her life in a kennel, and she's terrified mm-hmm. to be outside, and so she was always hiding under something. My husband said it's like life during wartime in the house. She goes from hidey hole to hidey hole. If we're lucky, we might see the glimpse of her little cotton tail, you know, going by, but it was hard to get, it's still a little difficult to get her out. It was just so uncorgi-like, you know.
That's almost a feral. I considered my border collie semi-feral. I rescued them at 8 or 9 weeks of age from a horse trainer that I knew who kept breeding his border collies over and over and over for the money. And
oh, dear.
Raised them or let them raise themselves in a horse trailer in a pasture, no windows, no human connectivity at all. And so if I had gotten them any older, we couldn't have, you know, it would be hard. It's, you know, feral means something specific, and it's hard to bring something back from the brink of what we would call feral.
Well, especially a dog like a border collie, Jesus, that's, I mean, they're so sensitive. That boggles my mind.
Yeah, and let me ask you this, too, especially because all of you know more about, you know, more of this, I guess, scientific or psychological part of a dog. But it's been my experience because, well, first, our first, never really had, well, I wouldn't call Edna a rescue because we got her from the breeders. They said they sold her twice. She came back. She had them bring her back. Corgis can have that kind of power over someone. And then she picked us out when we went to visit. And then she had Corgis. She begat. But until I got Parker and Benny and Fiona, I had never had what we call rescue dogs. And I tell people from my point of view, and mine is, like I said, I'm not a behavior specialist. But to me, I feel like it's like a dog. Because when people get aggravated with a rescue dog, I say, you know, it's kind of like, in my opinion, like you adopted a child from another country and you don't speak the language, so you don't know what they've been through. You don't know what's happened to them. And you have to be a little extra patient, a little extra diligent. I find that taking them to some kind of class, I don't care where it is, if it's just a, you know, what kind of dog class, but they kind of get some attached to you, like all these other people, all these other dogs have a person. Okay, I guess this one's mine. They keep coming with me, and I live them with them. But, you know, maybe that some kind of helps you sort of attach to each other. But, yeah, I always feel like it's like adopting a child that you don't know what their language is, you don't know what's happened to them.
So what
do you recommend?
I think that's exactly right, and it's a very good way of putting it. I think part of the problem for dogs these days, I almost sometimes feel like the entire species and the whole planet, that's a different discussion, but the dogs are kind of in a state of revolt just like humans are. And I have a friend here who I train with, and she says that we are all nature deprived. We're not out in nature anymore. And I think if we're anxious, and we are a very anxious nation, the amount of people that are on anti-anxiety drugs is staggering. I think our dogs are reflecting that back to us, that the dogs are anxious as well. And I think one of the big problems is that it's always been the dog needs to do what we say. The dog obeys us, or we're embarrassed, or we walk after midnight because we can't handle the shame of our dog lunging and barking. Yeah. Instead of putting ourselves, having some empathy, this is what I think is hopefully happening in dog training, finally and slowly. What does the dog need? And what you said was beautiful. It's like a person from a foreign culture. And so what is that person? How can I help that person adjust to my culture? Instead, I think it's we have the expectation, well, it's a dog. Dogs have been easy. Dogs have fit into our lives in the past. They don't anymore, a lot of them. They have issues that are human-caused, mostly. So what can we do to make that dog, that foreign, it is a different species, and I think people forget that because they fit so seamlessly in our lives most of the time. So what can we do, the smarter species, in theory, to help them relate to our world?
There are four words that just make me go, and, you know, I haven't had a dog in a long time, but we did foster for a while and, you know, worked with rescues. And there are four words that make me madder than anything with a dog owner. And those four words are, my dog's an alpha.
Yeah.
And what makes me mad about that is it's like, no, you lead the pack. You determine your dog's behavior. Yes, your dog can be a dominant dog over other dogs, but you can treat this train this dog not to attack other animals, not to be reactive to other animals, and that's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, don't just say, oh, my dog's dominant, just walk away with it, because sooner or later, you know, your dog's going to hurt another animal or a child or you.
Yeah, we see those of us on dog trainer forums or even just dog owners out there on Facebook, not a day goes by or a week goes by where some dog we're reading about was mauled by another dog off leash or dog park or even pet box dog training facilities. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a dog park when they go, when they say, oh, is your dog aggro? You're in the dog park, or they, don't know how to let dogs just play with each other and let them just do what they're going to do. Although occasionally Parker will try to hump another dog. But I always try to diffuse that with a little humor. Like, I'll try to rush up there and go, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know where he learned that. You know, just try to. I don't know where he learned how to do that. I am so sorry. And usually people will finally calm down and laugh a little bit and go on. But, we also have a question. You know, we have an extra special guest in here, Jeff. So, Jeff, you've been kind of hanging out here with us, unless you've gone out for coffee or something, or a cocktail. Jeff, you still here?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Jeff, who is your question for, and what is it?
Fascinating discussion so far. Thanks for having me. I'll ask my question and hang up and listen. It's for Annie, and I was just wondering, if you find yourself with an aggressive dog, the first thing you should do, obviously, is buy your book, but what would your advice be to someone in that situation? Like, what would you tell them they should do first, or your first bit of advice you'd have for them? Thanks.
That's a great question. I did write the book to empower dog owners to give them some immediate steps. It's interesting to me that we think we can't train our own dogs. I mean, there are some serious behavioral issues, separation anxiety, a dog that's biting, but a dog that is sitting, that jumps on people when they come to the door, even reactivity, barking and lunging, a frustrated greeter at the end of the leash, dog owners have to train that. They come to see somebody like me, I'm with them an hour a week. So it is on the dog owner, and that's one reason I wrote that book. But one of the most crucial things, particularly we were talking earlier about rescue dogs, or even from a breeder, you've taken a little vulnerable puppy out of what that dog knows. Mama's now gone. Siblings are gone. I mean, it is like taking a person from a totally different environment and inserting them into our world. And so whether if the dog's aggressive or not aggressive, has problems, doesn't have problems, I think we rush dogs far too much. And we know from scientific study that if a dog goes ballistic, sees another dog, barks, lunges, we call it going over threshold, like they can't even think, they can't hear you anymore. That's not the time to start training. It should. We try to keep them from doing that. When they're going over threshold, you've bypassed the learning phase. So, but when that does happen, same with thunderstorms, with your dog that's got some thunder issues, we know that the cortisol and stress hormones can stay elevated for as high as 30 days or longer. So even if your dog, the thunderstorm's passed, the scary person passed, the dog passed, and your dog looks calm to you, unless you're doing medical tests, how do you know that the cortisol has resolved itself? So those people who live in towns and walk their dogs every single day because they think their dog loves it, it's like walking me down a gauntlet of black widow spiders and saying, just deal with it. So dogs need that time. A lot of times I will say, if a dog is aggressive, I have a whole chapter in the book called Don't Walk the Dog for a month. Let those stress hormones and do other things, nose work and mind games, mind puzzles and find-me games in the house to allow that dog's system to calm down and to teach it new behaviors in a calm setting. And in my Growly Dog class, that's the one issue people have with my class is I'm not going to not walk my dog. That's cruel. And I'm coming from the standpoint of it's cruel to walk the dog if it has these kind of reactions. If it's that terrified that it's lunging and barking and eyes bulging and heart racing, don't walk it. That's my long
enough
answer.
Enough said. Yeah, you're right. I like that. Like walking you through black little spiders or something. You'd be like I've never walked into a sports bar without looking like I was in at gunpoint or something. You know, it'd be the same kind of thing. We'll just make her keep going, make her keep going.
Yeah.
Well, I think it comes down to you have to work around it. I mean, you have to kind of sidle into training other behaviors and then come back to the problem issue once you've gotten built confidence in yourself and the dog with other training that's easier for them too.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to keep climbing Mount Everest. You need to take a few steps at a time.
That's an excellent point, and also what you said, and I think that was Julie, that right, is the owner, too, has to learn new behavior because there's a feedback loop. You're walking your dog, and you see the other dog before even your dog does, and we tend to clamp down on the leash. Oh, crap, there's a dog. Oh, crap, there's a skateboard. You know, a dog are going by, whatever it is that freaks your dog out. And so then we've told the dog, uh-oh, be alert. And, you know, which happens first? The dog sees it and we yank on the leash or we yank on the leash and that cues the dog. So there is some owner education for sure that has to happen as well.
People have to learn that a dog is a huge commitment as well. I mean, we had people next door to us that had a boxer and a Burmese mountain dog that attacked both of us. And the boxer got hold of Tony's hand at 5:00 in the morning. And, you know, fortunately didn't bite him. The berm came after me, and we're talking a 200-pound dog. It starts running after me, and they're screaming, you know, Roxy,
he's
Roxy,
friendly.
Roxy. No, she wasn't.
That's what they usually
and they
say.
They were screaming, Roxy, Roxy, Roxy. I pointed at the ground, and I said, yelled, Roxy, sit, at you know, and just growled it at her. And the dog sat, and they're like, well, how did you do that? And I'm just like, I took obedience classes with the dog I had. I took them with the fosters I had.
Yeah, and I do that too. An oncoming dog, I will try to yell, sit, and try to body block. And it's such a problem. I mean, dogs are, like we said, attacked. And where those dogs, they sound like they were off leash. Unless they drop the leash. And if you're in a city where leash laws are required, I cannot understand the owner who says, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let my dog run free. Maybe they come from a starting point of dogs should be able to run and be free. Well, there's a safety reason for leashes. It's like a helmet or a seatbelt. And there's behaviorists say there's in dog training, behavior has consequences for all of us. And everything we do, behavior has consequences. Mm-hmm. You don't wear a seatbelt, there's a consequence. You might go through your windshield or you might get a ticket. Or you're lucky, you know, maybe nothing happens for 4 years, but something terribly bad can happen. Same with dogs off leash. It just, blows my mind how many people say, not for me, that well's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah.
endangers every other dog and every other person.
Yeah.
Well, they have safe places for you to take your dogs off leash, or sort of safe places. You know, they have dog parks if you want to let your dog run. There are locations where you are allowed to have your dog off leash. But I think the big problem there is people who let their dogs off leash don't necessarily have control of them.
Yeah.
Now, I trail ride with my older border collie, and I have complete control over her. If she takes off, you know, and runs down the trail, and I say, hey, get back here, she'll come back. But a lot of people, I see a lot of people out who don't, like, you know, their dogs will be running around, and I actually have to get off my horse and grab my dog and make sure that I can protect my dog from their dog. And then there are people whose dogs just stay right with them. So there are safe places to do it, but the city is definitely not one of them.
Yeah.
Well, or even the suburbs, you know, where I am. It's just, not so.
When I had obedience classes, the obedience trainer I had gotten her dogs, you know, championships in both obedience and agility. And she said, you know, I only let my dogs off lead when I have control over the perimeter. She said, because
mm-hmm.
I have spent, you know, money to purchase my dogs. They were purebred dogs. And she said, in addition to that, I've spent thousands of hours of my time. They are my family members, and it is my
mm-hmm.
job to protect them. And she said, I need to know, you know, I need to have control over the perimeter to
mm-hmm.
have them
yeah.
off lead.
Yeah, it's like dogs we think have the brain capacity of a 2 to 3 year old child. Of course, those of us with herding dogs think that, you know, probably a fifth or sixth grader. But it's like putting a 2 or 3 year old child next to a freeway and saying,
yeah.
just entertain yourself. Don't go. Please don't go on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's completely irresponsible.
Well, and there's so much shiny in the world.
Yep.
Yeah.
Squirrel.
Oh, so many shiny things. Squirrel. Yeah, we just, Hey, something else I wanted to talk about, and I think was it Annie that mentioned that we're sort of nature deprived? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that was Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, Annie, that is not true of Julie because I'm pretty sure it was not. That's not true of Julie because Julie,
we do pretty good.
She knows where I'm going with this because Julie was born, I am told, legend has it, she was born in Iowa, I swear to you, next to a place called Duck Creek Mall in a pumpkin patch. She was born in a pumpkin patch.
That's what I've been told.
She was
my
a pumpkin patch.
They got
kid.
Me out of the pumpkin patch.
She lives in Colorado, right? You live in Colorado,
yeah, I live
right?
out in Colorado now.
It's hard to be nature deprived here, I have to say.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, we're out east of the mountains a little ways. It takes us an hour to get there. We go to the mountains all the time. I live in the country. You know, we get to the outside quite a bit. You know, we'll go to the grasslands in the winter, and you know, I'll just go in the mountains in the summer, and you know. Out working the sheep and, you know, all that stuff. I'm sure my dogs would be happy if we did it 24/7, but we do pretty good for, you know, still having to work a day job.
Well, tell me about Brown.
Oh, okay. Well, Brown is my border collie that I write about. She sends me her stories from the past. She lived in the early 1900s with her human Elliot, and she hunts ghosts. She uses her border collie eye to herd the ghosts into the summoning traps, and then Elliot will banish them. And sometimes they have to fight other magical constructs. And I recently wrote a story where they were fighting, where they had an encounter with ghostly dinosaurs, of all things. She narrates her own stories to me, lets me tell them. And she's definitely got some opinions about lots of different things, including cats and squirrels and sheep.
It's a great cover for the book. It's Brown, the ghost hunting dog. So how did you tell us how this book came about?
Well, going back a little ways, before I wrote my ghost hunting dog stories, when I was first getting started in the professional writing world, I'd been writing stories for a long time, but
getting started in the professional writing world, a friend of mine asked me to write a short story for one of her forums that was having a short story contest. And I had no idea what to write about. And I was sitting at my desk. And the theme for the short story was something about vampires. So I was sitting at my desk with my back to the door, and I could feel Kira staring at me with that eye of hers. I knew she had a ball in her mouth. I hadn't heard her walk up or anything. I just heard her, or I could feel her staring at me. So I turn around, and sure enough, there she is with the ball in her mouth. I was like, huh. I bet if a human who is generally a non-psychic creature can feel that, what would it do to a vampire? I was like, maybe they can control vampires with that eye, that psychic power of theirs. And so I wrote this short story about a vampire hunting border collie who uses her eye to control vampires while her human, you know, will stake them. And then, people really liked it, so I wrote more of them. And I collected them into a really, really short little book. And then I got invited to go down and see some authors do a reading, and I took it with me, and I showed it to them. And someone on that panel, whose name is David Riley, happened to buy it and really liked it, because he loves dog stories. And he invited me to write a story for a collection he was doing, because he's a small press publisher, old Western ghost stories. And I was like, huh, well, if they can hunt vampires, why not ghosts? So that's how Brown was born. I decided to write a story about a ghost hunting border collie. It's so popular that I've written a lot of them, and that's where that collection comes from, is the first set of ghost hunting dog stories that I wrote and collected together. So I'm working on another collection.
We need to see that on the big screen.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh,
cool.
Yes.
I wouldn't complain. But I have a lot of fun writing from a dog's point of view. I don't claim to be an expert in anything, but I do like to observe, and so I watch my dogs, and, you know, I try and use their mannerisms and behavior, especially Kira. She's, you know, I've had her longer than Bron, and my puppy, well, he's a year old now, but my puppy, and so she's influenced my dog stories quite a bit, and I kind of think Brown has something of her voice, and it's just been really fun to try and capture dog in fiction.
I like the tags for the two dogs. For Brown, the ghost hunting dog, he says they have a ghost mm-hmm. problem, and I'm the dog for the job. And the
yep.
other, for Doc, the vampire hunting dog, he says herding sheep and killing vampires before breakfast. It's good to have a job.
Oh, border collies like their jobs.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah, herding animals, they got to stay busy.
Oh, my gosh. I was actually just talking to someone today, and I was like, yeah, if you don't give them a job, they'll go self-employed, and you may not like what they decide their job is.
Yeah, that's what I read in a corgi book. It says corgis, you know, like to have a leader, and they'll follow, and they like structure. But if no
yeah.
one sets up for the job of leader, they'll be happy to take the job on themselves. And God knows that's true.
Well, one of the places I heard... There's a bunch of corgis who herd up there, so it's kind of neat to see the corgis herd, too. They do a lot of duck work and goats and stuff, and they can work the sheep, too.
Well, you know, and the thing is, I wouldn't want, much as I love these kids, I'd never had a corgi, didn't know anything about them, and the salon manager had bred corgis, and he kept saying, where I was working at the time, and he said, you know, kept on, and my husband goes, look, I've lived with a corgi, and people... They never said they had a corgi. They lived with a corgi. They knew a corgi. but it was all unusual to me. But of course, I got under control. I think, as far as they're concerned. But I would never want them to be popular, like in a movie or something, like 101 Dalmatians, because
yeah,
always,
God no.
Always, whenever there's a Dalmatian, you know where I'm going. You say it.
There's a whole soapbox that I'm going to try and not get on here about the border collies getting official AKC registration.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Mine are not AKC.
Most of them didn't like that. And, the AKC's got a lot of great things. I'm not going to badmouth the AKC by any means, but the confirmation registration, there's a split in the breed now. There's the confirmation border collies, and then there's the working dogs. And it's obvious which line they came out of. It's very interesting.
I had a collie. That was my single dog. And he was a show dog. He was a show prospect that the breeder sold. And she had worked him. And he was, you know, an excellent disposition dog, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear to you,
nice
he could not herd sheep. He was dainty. He had spindly legs. And, you know, he never, you know, my vet ragged on me because my dog never got over 55 pounds. He pretty much stayed at 50. And I said, do I have a skinny animal? Am I skinny? And he's like, well, no. You have a good point there. I said, I feed him. But it just never took.
Yeah.
And,
Kira's pretty lean. I mean, she's you know, working dog, and she's always out and about. And she's about 31, 32 pounds. And, I've had people in the past kind of, do you feed your dog? I'm like, yeah, you have no idea how much I feed my dog.
But she's muscle.
Dog diet.
She's muscle. My dog was smart enough, but he was dainty. He was not built like the old farm collies that you would see. I mean, there's a whole difference between those two breeds of dogs.
It's and very interesting.
His grandsire, that I didn't really realize until I got to know the breeder and became friends with her, his grandsire, he was such a show dog that his show coat in winter was literally down to the floor.
Wow.
I mean, you know, we're not he looked more to me like an old English sheepdog than a collie, because his coat was so freaking long, and they've just overbred.
Yeah.
And you know what else tends to happen is dogs at one time were bred for a purpose. You know, you have a terrier on the farm to get the bulls and the gophers and the prairie dogs.
Yeah.
Well, then you 50, 100 years later, nobody lives on farms anymore, or hardly anyone does. And even if they did, they didn't want them killing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then people get mad. Well, my terrier's digging all the time. Well, he's chasing prey all the time. Or you get a hunting
that's what
dog.
What you're supposed to do.
You know, like a wired-haired pointer. And they're like, well, he just wants to go and follow his nose. And so I always look for a way to use what they were originally bred for to our advantage. Like I'm working with a Borzoi, beautiful dog. And his problem is not completely unexpected. They live up in Pagosa Springs in the mountains, and every time they take him off leash, he goes. He just loves to run. I mean, he was built to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so to fix that, you know, does the dog have to stay on leash for the rest of his life? No, because it's beautiful to watch him run, and in a safe place, it's a great thing for him to be doing. So when he starts running, he just goes into eyesight hunting mode, and so we switched it up for him, and we have the owners. It's a couple. And we have one go hide in the woods, and he watches, and then the other owner releases and says, go find. And so then we turn it into, let's hunt the human, you know, obviously not to hurt them. And we're using what the dog loves to do to our advantage. And so it's just interesting to me. We get, you know, we like the look of this dog or what that dog did, and then when they do it, a lot of owners get very upset at the dog, do what they were bred to do.
They don't do their research and don't truly understand what it means to have a X type of dog, you know, like a nose dog. Like my friend has a border collie, or not a border collie, a basset hound, and they're nose dogs. And she's got some, you know, she loves basset hounds. She's had them all her life, so that wasn't an issue for her. But, you know, people keep saying, oh, you got to let him off a leash and let him run and do his things. And she's like, no, he won't come back. He's just going to follow his nose. And so... You know, she knows that, and she's fine. But, you know, other people don't understand. And, yeah, there's a lot of people, they don't do the research to understand what the breed is that they're getting into when they get, especially when they get a purebred dog. It's like, no, you need to understand what that breed was meant to do, and then you need to provide something of an outlet along the lines of what it was meant to do for that dog to, you know, truly flourish and not drive
you
insane.
If you look on Facebook on my page where I've got my profile picture, it's me and Fiona when we were, I took her into a PetSmart and the trainer said something about how nervous she was. And she says, bring her to my puppy socialization class. I know she's not a puppy, but bring her to the socialization class. It'll help her a lot. And it did. And that picture was taken the night of her graduation. And you see, I'm is a picture of me and her in a book, and I'm showing it to her because it says the over 50 dog owner, you know, to try to,
yeah.
to show her how to understand me and, you know, work with me and train me better.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of training that has to go, yeah, I guess maybe even both ways. But, yeah, that's what I said, you know, when I hate things like the Dalmatians, and then people get Dalmatians and then they put them to shelters because it's not like the cartoon,
yeah,
or whatever. And the same thing with Corgi. Some people think it's, oh, so cute. And then they just send their little badasses, you know, back to a shelter. They can't help. It's their nature. You know, learn about this dog. It's like people that date, you know, date somebody a few weeks and get married. You don't know anything about them.
Yeah. Well, border collies have the same sort of thing. People are like, oh, I want a smart dog. And most people, it's like, no, no, you really don't, I promise.
Well, you really have to spend your time figuring out how they're training you.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I learned a lot from Kira. I mean, she was my first border collie, and I learned a ton from her. And, you know, I'm still learning constantly. Bron is teaching me different lessons and stuff. But, yeah, it was very, very enlightening. She's a wonderful dog, and she has taught me a lot. And she taught me a lot. So, you know.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, too. Annie, I see on your website where people can contact you and get information about classes and so forth. But you said, what kind of sessions are you interested in? Growly dog class, nose work class, private, and Skype sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about Skype sessions. How do they work?
I've been doing that for a while, and I'm actually, in the fall, we're going to, I'm going to be working with two other trainers. One is in Ireland and one is in California. Positive reinforcement trainers. We all have different specialties. And together we're going to offer a unique kind of a class that you can take and get the benefit of all three of us and, you know, three different areas of knowledge. We'll roll that out in the fall. But right now people can send me an email and say, I have this issue with my dog. And it helps me so much, and anybody, it helps to see the animal in its own home, in its own environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about Skype, is that you can tell me all day long what the dog is doing, but dogs are so subtle and so quick in their in their body language, and humans generally don't know much about. I mean, you know, we can see if the hackles are raised, and like a lot of people say, dogs can bite if the tail is wagging, which is not true. So I like to see the dog, and that's what I love about Skype, is that I can see the dog, or they can watch me work with one of my dogs. And so just send me an email, and we set up a time and take it from there.
So you recognize, Annie, little subtle things that most of us don't notice. Even if we think we know, we think we watch them, like, is there something like maybe just a look or just a twitch of the eye or a turn of the ear that can tell you something?
Yeah, I actually have an article coming out tomorrow on doxter.com about, it's originally called The Subtlety of Canine Body Language. And talked about a little bit of some of the cases I've been working on this year. And one really quick was so interesting, where two Labrador brothers, that a couple had gotten, they had lots of experience with labs. They live out in the country, so the dog had a lot of activity. They had 6 months old, and they suddenly started turning on each other. Like, they'd run, and then they'd suddenly start fighting. Sometimes that could be teenage hormones or pain. You know, maybe they stepped in a prairie dog hole. They ruled out pain. That's what I usually say, is go to your veterinarian first and rule out anything medical. And they came over here, and one was a runt and much smaller than the other. And I could have them sitting perfectly and behaving wonderfully and paying attention. And the second I reached down to touch the runt, to pet him, to reinforce him, he looked in an instant. You'd almost have to film it to see it. He got a whale eye, which is a white eye, wide eye, and the white in the eye. And he immediately turned and redirected on his brother, like just kind of popped him in the neck. So I did it several times, and I said, what is going on? What could possibly happen to this puppy, who was 6 months old, that if a human reaches a hand in, it causes him to redirect his anxiety onto his brother? And the brother was bigger and getting tired of it, is what was happening. Like, stop it. I told you to stop this. So I started talking to the owners, and they noticed, they remembered, when they went to go pick up the dogs from the breeder, they went to get one dog. They came home with two dogs because a little boy, and this happens far too often, a three-year-old boy came walking around the corner dangling the runt over his shoulder.
Oh!
So they said, we'll take two because that's not cool. And so a runt, you know, or even sometimes the biggest. I think they got the runt and the biggest, and sometimes they can have different issues. And the runt has to fight to survive in most cases in utero. And then it gets born, and it's still fighting to survive. So it's always, to me, a runt system, not always, but can be stressed just from living and being the smallest. And then you have a three-year-old unsupervised kid dragging it around. So mm-hmm. the dog learned, we talked about touch, being an aversive. The dog was now conflicted because he was in a really good home, and he liked being touched, but he had that puppy imprint of his mind of a kid reaching for him and grabbing him, making him, I think, feel, you know, the dog can't tell me that, but mm-hmm. it was such a fast and, you know, it was almost like on cue. You know, I said, I can recreate this. I'm going to touch the runt and watch what happens. And every single mm-hmm. time, instead of redirecting to the humans, he just jumped on his brother. And so once we narrowed it down, what is the cause of this as best we can determine? The dog quit. He quit doing it. We slowly helped him to understand that he's not going to be picked up and dangled and that a hand coming towards him is a very, very good thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what my calling is about tomorrow, is that if we didn't know that, we'd be blaming the dog. He's a bad dog. Why is he jumping on his brother? You know, he had a reason.
So that's Dogster, D-O-G-S-T-E-R, dogster.com. This tomorrow's subtlety of dog language.
That's the online version. It's also a magazine now. It replaced Dog Fancy. So I write for that too. And that's out every other month, pretty much everywhere. But yeah, that's it tomorrow.
Nice.
All right. So, guys, it's been so great to have you here. And I know I can't take up your whole night, but I do want to thank you all so very much. I didn't get really to Tales from the Front Lines, although we've had a special show dedicated to that. Actually, it was on Veterans Day, wasn't it, Becky?
Yeah, Veterans Day last
year. That was the first show that you put together and produced.
I think so, yeah.
So, and I'm so grateful to you for the wonderful people that you bring to me. And if you guys are fine with it, though, I'd like to have you back and have Doug Bremner in. Dr. Bremner.
Absolutely. That would be awesome.
Because I was telling somebody, you know, recently, actually it was a client of mine, Sherry Meeks, I was talking with her recently. I said, you know, I have this feeling that we're going to all be held accountable one day, excuse me, for how we treat animals. And I said, and with and things like Parker, I said, sometimes, you know, I feel like he can tell me, he can get it through, or he can get it through to my head that there's going to be a thunderstorm then or an hour or two. But if I was going to leave, he probably knows it's going to be one in 6 hours, but he can't tell me before I leave the house. He hasn't quite figured out how to get that through to my brain yet. And I said, I wish that I understood more. And then I'm in Borders because I had Sherry set up for a signing. I mean, not Borders, Barnes & Noble. And I see a book, something like, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Our Dogs Are? I think that was the title. Not me. I'm trying all the time. But I would love to have you all back and have Doug Bremner, and you will love him, and see what we can come up with. So I am so thrilled to have you here, though. Like I said, I know I've got to let you go, but this is Madam Perry Salon. Thanks to Jeff, our caller, who hung out with us for a while tonight. Jeff, it was delightful to have you here, and I hope you come back again when we all back together. And for everybody else to answer, too. Becky Kyle, always follow her. She's always got something happen. She's a writer. She's an editor. Get her book, Fanny and Dice. It's Eurydice and
Persephone.
Persephone, yeah, and Eurydice, and who escape Hades and go to the Wild West. That book is fast. It's good. It's good. And get everything she does.
Thank you.
Tales from the Front Lines, different stories and the part of the profits go to Wounded Warrior Projects. Also, tonight I've been delighted to have Julie Campbell back into Madam Perry Salon. And so she has so many books. She has young adult books. She has vampire books. I don't know when you sleep, Julie. You and Becky, I don't know when you sleep.
Well, it happens occasionally.
But these dogs, about the vampire hunting dog and the ghost hunting dog, yeah, I'm with Becky. I think we need to have these on the big screen. I think we got to make this happen. You know, I've got a book over there, a directory of Hollywood producers and studios. Just saying, Julie, just saying.
Well, I vote for that, too. I would love to see it on the big screen.
All right. I like it too. Annie Phoenix, also thrilled to have you here. You are a nationally recognized behavior expert, AKC evaluator, and nose work competitor. I would love to learn more about your growly dog classes. Your book is called, your new book is The Midnight Dog Walkers. It's in bookstores nationwide.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. I'd come back anytime.
Oh, good, good, good. I hope so. I hope you all will.
And thanks to Becky for the connection.
Hey,
you are most
Becky. Becky knows the coolest people. And you know what? Like even last week when you couldn't make it on the show, Becky, you put it together. You put me with those boys again. And Paula Brady couldn't make it. But I had the guys. You couldn't make it. And what do they talk about? How much they love you. So, and I think that's
seriously.
So wonderful. You know, you weren't there, but they didn't forget. You know, everybody loves you, and with good reason. So, yeah, they were talking about you. But, yes.
Now my ears
are
burning.
In a good way. I like on Annie's page, phoenixdogs.com. It says, author, trainer, and a dog's best friend. I know you are. And just so you know, I wasn't trying to slight anybody, but on my little screen here that's on the Blog Talk Radio, sometimes I'll put in all the information about all the guests, and then Blog Talk Radio takes half of it out. So that's why I started off with everything. It's not all there. It's nothing personal, everybody. It's them. It's not me. But I will have everything about Annie Phoenix, how to find out more about her, Julie Campbell, Becky Kyle on the Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook, as well as on Twitter and probably Google, and probably on the Madame Perry Salon page on Pinterest. I will also put information about all of you there, if you don't mind.
Awesome.
Sure. Thanks.
Good. Okay, good.
Excellent.
And so I just want to thank you again for coming. Does anybody have any parting words to say? Any place you're going to be live and in person where people should come see you?
Well, thanks. First off, thanks for having me. And it was great to meet you, Annie. And, of course,
yeah,
Becky, it's always a pleasure. I will be at the Denver Comic Con at the end of June selling books and probably talking on some panels and stuff. I'll have my Ghost Hunting Dog book with me along with a bunch of other things. The book Becky and I wrote should be out by then and whatever. So that's my next appearance in public that I'm aware of.
Hey, mm-hmm. We will look for you up there. I think we're going to be there too.
Yeah, look for me.
What about you, Annie?
Really wonderful.
I mostly have just radio and print interviews coming up and hope to do a book tour in the fall. We're actually in the process of moving, so we put a tour off to the fall, and I'm looking forward to that and hope that happens. And I'm in Dogster.com every Thursday. That's when my column runs.
Dogster.com every Thursday, and, of course, Dogster, the magazine, you can get it. At Barnes & Noble, wherever great magazines are. And
PetSmart and Petco, too, I think, now.
PetSmart, Petco. Yeah, that's right. And if you're an author or a musician and you want to learn how to get your music or books out someplace but you just don't have the money to hire an entertainment publicist like moi, I have my Promote This DIY publicity for authors and musicians. I just go to my website, lonewolfcom.net, and I have that on my page as well. And sign up for my webinar, and I'll teach you how to be your own publicist and get your stuff going. And Becky Kyle, last words for you?
I will be at the Blount County Library in Maryville, Tennessee on the 28th with a lady that's going to have dragon's eggs there. And I will be at SoonerCon in Oklahoma City on the end of June, and I will have books and panels, and I'll be autographing, et cetera, there too.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so very much. And I'm going to end this with my intro music. It's called Miss E's Vacation. Actually, it's written and performed by my husband. It's for our first corgi, Edna, Miss E. And you'll notice the sound is supposed to be the sound of a corgi running up and down the beach. That's how the melody line flows. Just thought I'd mention that because we're dog people. All right. Annie Phoenix, Julie Campbell, Becky Kyle, thank you so very much for having me.